Welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. In this podcast, we dig into the exact playbooks that ABM practitioners are using today to get their first ABM program off the ground. We'll dig into how they're using their current tech stack in order to create scrappy programs that rely more on creativity than new technologies. So if you're looking for how to get ABM off the ground in your organization in the next 90 days, let's dive into this episode. Hello and welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. This is your host, Mason Cosman, and joined by Jess Martin, who is the head of demand gen. And we are going to be talking through how she has built a couple ABM programs, most specifically the first and most practical implementation that she did that aligned all the roles and responsibilities across the organization and was massively successful in some unexpected ways. So Jess, thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, of course.
All right. I'm going to go ahead and give a little bit of a teaser for everybody because so many people just get so frustrated because they're like, how do I get sales bought in? And you did one of the most practical things that I've heard from really anybody. And I've done over 200 of these episodes. So like I've talked to a lot of people about account-based marketing. So I'm excited to tease that out as we dig into it. So that said, before we dig into all the details, can you just give us a quick high-level overview of like what was the program you built? And then what were some of the key objectives and strategies you guys were trying to execute?
Yeah, absolutely. So we were a tiny series A, or I'm sorry, seed round company trying to kind of punch above our weight. And so ABM wasn't really a nice to have. It was the go-to-market strategy because for us to get additional funding to get to that series A round, you know, we had to lock down more customers. So branding, important. All kinds of demand gen important, but ABM was crucial so that we could get those logos on the site and move on to the next level. We obviously wanted to drive pipeline from really, really targeted accounts from our ICP. And we went about it in like a hyper-targeted way, which I think obviously is really, really important. So personalized outreach, that has to be first and foremost for everyone involved, for marketing, sales, building air cover across paid and organic and outbound channels so that we're, you know, making sure that there's awareness going on, there's branding going on. It's for a specific number of accounts. It's not to the whole world. It's not to your full ICP, especially because, you know, at a company that size, your budget is super, super limited. So we built really lean, but scrappy. So cold calling, personalized LinkedIn engagement, targeted thought leadership ads, partner webinars, things like that. Just targeted and simple because we didn't have, you're looking at the marketing team at the time.
I love it. And so I'll be fully transparent. Yeah. I always wrestle with ABM at like really early stage organizations because there may not always be product market fit and people are like, I don't know if this is going to work. Mm-hmm. I love your framing though, which is we knew we needed to get some specific logos. We knew that these were the right kinds of logos for our website that would help us secure the Series A. So again, I think ABM works at all size organizations because it's really just hyper-personalized targeted marketing. But again, to your point, you had a very clear goal and objective and you knew what winning looks like, which is how you then determine your target account list. So that's a really helpful frame for everybody. As you're building on ABM, make sure you've actually got a clear, tangible goal and objective that is more than just we should do ABM because this seems to be what people do when they want to get to a certain size and scale. But it's like we need to get these specific logos. So I love that call out. As you think through sourcing the target account list, we'll talk about like how you enrich the whole list later, but like specifically, how did you determine those logos that you needed on the site and those specific accounts that you wanted to go after?
Yeah, so we kind of reverse engineered our ICP and looked at, we had like a small number of accounts already that we had secured through, you know, founder relationships, stuff like that, networking. And we looked at, you know, who are we winning with? Who do we lose to and who do we never want to waste time on again? Because with a small team, time wasting is the death of anything. So we used a mix of key play. So that kind of gave us a little bit of intent-driven account prioritization, Apollo and SalesNav to get that actual contact information of the buying committee before, you know, like the company is great, but you need to know who the people are. And then we used BuiltWith also to kind of figure out if they have the right stack. That was really helpful for us. And then you know, we'd toss it around internally too. So I'd create this list and then I'd make everyone literally put their initials in a spreadsheet, the head of product and the head of sales. So that way, you know, if we booked a meeting, if miraculously we book a meeting down the line and someone's like, why are we talking to these guys? I can show them like, here's your initial where we talked about like this account in particular. We decided this is perfect for us. And that was the list.
So what size list is that? Because I am in the process of helping some clients build out target account lists. And I love that idea. So like what, yeah. how many accounts did you manually go and validate?
So we had two tiers only. We didn't go past that. Tier one was 20 accounts. And then tier two was like 21 through, I think, 150. So not a massive, massive number, something that was attainable. We had two AEs at the time. We had a founder and a head of product that were able to step in and help with sales when necessary. If bandwidth was a problem, which is always going to be a good problem to have. And me as the marketer. So around, what is that? Like around 170 total, with 20 being those like premium accounts that got the white glove service.
I love that you've nailed it down to, okay, we've got about 170 accounts. Because let's think through it. That's not a small number of accounts to manually validate, but it's also, if you really sat down and you looked at them and you looked at their websites, probably take you a minute or two. So if you as an organization sat down and just said, all right, I'm gonna lock in, it's gonna take me 3 hours, but then I know we're aligned whenever we get meetings. That is a 3-hour time investment that saves tens or hundreds of hours of wasted time later, especially if you end up building an ABM program that gets customers that are the wrong kinds of customers. So I love the upfront just due diligence to make sure we actually went after the right people. I'm curious, how did you then actually, once you got manual validation from everybody, how did you actually enrich with the right contacts for the program itself?
That was mainly Apollo and just... not even sales now. That was Apollo and then cross-checking profiles on LinkedIn, making sure I got their locations right, making sure I understood their role within the organization. And we kind of outlined a buyer committee and had those roles ready to go. And it's also important to know, especially I work in tech, so it's really important to understand that different size orgs have different job titles and they can mean the same thing and have the same responsibilities, but it's just, it's important to know that distinction. So making sure that you have, I would say about 3 to 5 contacts per account is generally good, especially if you're at the size that we are or we were at the time. And then getting their contact info from Apollo, double checking, making sure that when you go to segment things, you're segmenting appropriately. They didn't move jobs 2 months ago and now they're working in, you know, supply chain and you had them down as like FinServe.
I love it. And yeah, it's we look at it through the lens of like minimum viable list size. So we've worked with some clients that are like, well, we only want to go after these 30 accounts. Like, that's great. But like LinkedIn's list requirement is like 300 match contacts.
Yeah.
So if you only go up to 30 accounts, that's great. That just means we need 10 match contacts. And if you're going after 30 accounts, then there's likely 10 people in a department or an adjacent department that would be helpful to go after. But that's also just helpful as people are thinking through, okay, I've got this number of accounts. How many contacts do I need to make sure that we hit at least the list minimums for LinkedIn? And then the other list minimum to think through would be, I think if I'm not mistaken, Facebook or /Meta is 1,000 contacts. So again, that sounds like a lot, but 170 companies, you need like 6 people per account. So like those are helpful benchmarks to be thinking through for your programs. If you want to go the advertising route, or you already referenced very scrapping, cold outbound is another channel for just getting in front of these audiences. So perfectly led into what channels did you actually end up using to get in front of these audiences?
Yeah, I love thought leadership ads on LinkedIn. I think they're cheaper, they're more impactful. I always get a better impression share with it because you're putting a face to it instead of a company to your message. And at an early stage, founder branding is a huge deal too. So it kind of 2 birds with 1 stone. So branding your founder or, you know, your whatever ICP internally is going to get the most eyeballs and going to be the most useful to people, And it could be a mix of people too, but get those thought leadership ads in front of your buying committee as often as you can, and do different ones too, not just the same one over and over and again. We had two founders, so we were kind of going back and forth to see which ones resonated, and one was more technical, one was more thought leadership-y. It was fantastic. So, and the goal is not to drive clicks to the website with that either. You're really just trying to warm up these accounts and make them aware of who you are. And then when they're interacting with those, you can start to remarket with your company ads and get more into your like top of funnel messaging. And then from there, you can move into case studies, testimonials, interesting stats and stuff that you can put. And then, you know, after that, it's, you know, you can direct people to your website. You can say, come talk to sales, request a demo, check out our sandbox, whatever. But for me, the ads on LinkedIn are really just about branding, targeted air cover, so that they have a deep familiarity by the time you get a hold of them.
I love it. So we did a lot on LinkedIn to make sure people, again, knew we existed. I'm curious, what were the other channels you were using to help drive those conversions to inevitable meetings booked?
Yeah, so we would do tiny virtual events. And so what we would do is we would take a look at our target account list and see if there was a particular vertical where we had, you know, more than I would say 10 accounts or 15 accounts. And then we would look at the people who worked at those. And then we would invite those people to a webinar that, or like not a webinar, but like a roundtable or just a discussion with our founder to talk about a very specific issue that's hitting that vertical. So it could be compliance issues that are facing financial institutions because of a new law in Europe that was just launched. So it's going to be really interesting. It's timely. And so we'll hit the people who work at those accounts who compliance issues would be a problem for, which is more than you would think. And then, so, you know, you identify that problem that's going to be broad enough that a lot of people will struggle with it, but poignant enough that people are going to like be really interested to hear what other leaders in the space have to say. And so then you're getting them in a room with you, and you know, the attendance rate's rough, but in my mind, I think if three people from your target account list show up from that vertical and know that you're the expert when it comes to compliance issues for like insurance companies or finance, whatever, that's gold. So I, you know, three attendees to me is still a win. Those are very, very valuable. And then from that, we did, you know, basic retargeting and stuff. And then I mentioned cold calling too. I actually did that as myself, like as a marketer. I would take a look at the cold, because, well, I'll give you a little bit of context too. We had two AEs. And for us at the enterprise level that we were going for with these accounts, having AEs that were killers at closing and navigating very complex enterprise deals was mandatory. And so it's hard to find that unicorn that can do that and is also like, you know, a shark when it comes to prospecting. And so that was kind of a gap for us, which means that inbound was going to be king when it came to actually bringing people in, because it's the only way they're coming in, really. So I created a very simple Google form and created a survey with our head of product. And it was just like informational, like, what do you think about X in things that had to do with our industry? Nothing about our product specifically, but I would create that Google form and then I would just start dialing. I would start calling people on that Apollo list that I created for our target account list. I'd call the people on the buying committee and be like, hey, I'm Jessica. I'm the head of marketing for Metaphor Data. We're a new data catalog on the block and we're doing a survey on X, Y, and Z. And as a senior data engineer, it would be invaluable to have your input for this survey. Would it be okay if I went ahead and sent it to you? And then you're complimenting them, you're fluffing their ego a little bit, you're acknowledging their role in the space and their leadership. And, you know, not everyone's going to do it. A ton of people aren't going to answer their phone. But for the ones that do, you've made the connection, you've branded the company, you show that you care about thought leadership and, you know, having a deep understanding in the space. And then you've got their contact information and you can start doing warm intros to sales. I can't speak to how scalable it is for a marketer to do that, but on a project base, it went great. It was very, very successful for us.
There's a couple basic questions I want to break down. So like one, did you, and I mean this very sincerely, did you just go rogue and just say, all right, I'm going to start calling people? Or like, did you run that by CEO or like, all right, I wanted to do this as an experiment before I ask our AEs? Did you ask the AEs first? And they're like, I don't have time for this. And you're like, well, somebody's got to do it. So like, let me, you know, pull up by my bootstrap. Like, how did you actually have the conversation internally to then just say, I'm going to go do this? Or did you have the conversation internally? Or just like, how did that happen?
I did have the conversation, and it started with me wanting, I love it when BDRs report into marketing. And as the head of marketing at the time, I was trying to angle for that early on. So, you know, I knew we had this gap in prospecting and was like, we should bring on an SDR. We should grab someone and have them on the team and start working on prospecting. And it was kind of like a not needed at the time, you know, we don't have time. We can't onboard. We don't have time to train someone, all of it, budgets, everything. So I was like, okay, that's a huge bummer. I still think we need to do prospecting though. And then I asked if I could try the function and just give it a shot. And I think at the time, because we were seed round, we were early, no one was super, super worried about like me destroying the brand or anything like that with a bad phone call. So I tried it a couple times and it didn't work very well. At least for me, I'm not a professional BDR. I think some people are fantastic at that, but I went straight sales method and it did not work for me. So then I took a step back and was like, hey guys, I've got this idea. What if we did a survey? I call as myself and I don't pretend to be, you know, a salesperson for the company because I'm not, and I don't know how to speak like one. And it was kind of like, let's try it. That's what's so great about early stage companies too. It's, you know, you get three people in a room, you've got the CEO, the head of product, the CTO, an AE, whoever it is. And they're just like, I mean, yeah, why not? Let's give it a shot, you know? And so that was kind of my MO for it. I was like, if I can book like 10 meetings from my outbounding, then I'll have the ammunition I need to go ahead and ask again, like, okay, so this works. Can we bring on an SDR now? And it did work. And we were able to bring on an SDR because we were able to prove that concept.
I love that. Because one of the biggest reasons ABM programs fail in general is the lack of resources. And what I love about the approach that you took is you identified a clear gap. You're like, I'll step into the gap for a little bit. Sure, there are other fires that will burn, but like those are smaller fires. So this big, massive gap that like we have no one prospecting. So we do it first, prove that it works, and then I can go secure the additional resources to actually fill this gap long term. Super smart. I love that framework.
Exactly. The last thing I'd want from an ABM program at the end of it is to be like, this failed because we didn't have this function filled. You know, if it was like we chose the wrong accounts or we learned something during it, there are many reasons I think an ABM program deserves a 2.0 and you learn from your mistakes and everything. But like, we had no one to do outbound it wasn't something I was willing to settle for.
I love it. So you've already referenced that you had these surveys. You were creating a lot of thought leadership content. Were there any other content destinations that you were creating as a component of the program?
We had a lot of blog posts going, and that was a lot of what the thought leadership posts were too on LinkedIn. We would, you know, create a blog and then create a series of posts that kind of bubble up to it. So then, you know, once they've seen, okay, like your CEO says this about X and your CTO says Y about this, then you can come back and start with your company ads, marketing your blog posts and routing it through your social channels and everything.
I love it. So as you were building out this program, I mean, obviously there were meetings that you ended up booking when you were, you know, being your own SDR and then hired an SDR. These were enterprise sellers, so they had long, complex sales cycles. I'm curious, how did you end up measuring success along the way?
So the first one for me is account penetration. So I want to see how many sites are actually engaging with us, whether it's, you know, looking at who's liking the posts and the thought leadership ads that you're running on LinkedIn, who's visiting your website. And if you upload your list directly into LinkedIn, that's really easy to do because it'll show you the engagement metrics there. And then you can go back to sales and say, okay, this week, these are the accounts that clicked on ads. These are the accounts that liked a post. This is the post. You know, it takes a couple of hours a week of really analyzing what you've done for the week and what you got out of it, but it's totally worth it because then you can figure out, and then you can start to segment even more. You can take the accounts that have interacted with you and say, okay, start working these ones. I'm going to put more budget towards these ones that haven't interacted with us yet and see what's going on here. And if there are some that are completely dark and it just doesn't seem like they're worth it anymore, like take them out of there and swap them out. I always like to have a little alternate list of about 30 accounts too on the bench just to swap in there if something's not working out.
I love the alternates list. We actually, when we do account tiering, we've got a TB and then an alternates list. And then if for whatever reason, after a long, like a 3-month time frame, we've done a ton of awareness programming, they've done zero activities. It's like, got it. It's like, we're going to swap you out for somebody else. Or the other thing that happens, crazy thing, we win a customer and then they no longer need that programming. And we're like, still works. So we just cycle somebody else in. So I love having the alternates list. And I think it's one of the big misses because people like put all this time, energy, and effort. They don't systematically add new accounts. So love that call out. As you are thinking about the things that work super well, like what, as you look back, you're like, I didn't know we were going to nail this, but like this part we nailed, and that has become like a best practice I use for every program moving forward.
Yeah. One thing is I was really proud of our personalization, and this wasn't part of the plan heading into it. To be honest, our plan heading into it was very lean, and we just kind of learned along the way and like, oh, this would be good to incorporate. This is how we would nail messaging. And so what I started doing for those top 20 accounts that we talked about is I had a prompt, like a ChatGPT prompt, and I created a GPT of a BDR. Basically, I was like, you're a fantastic BDR, top of your line, all of that. You're looking at 10K reports, you're looking at press releases, you're looking at anything you can find about this account. I would do one at a time. And I would say, and then I would feed it our messaging too and our value props. And I would say, explain exactly why we are the perfect fit for these guys. Tie it to news that's going on at the company. Tie it to global news that could impact the company. Really like just a really killer study guide. And then once I had that, I would say, okay, given that information on this account, here are the 5 people at that account that I'm going after and their job titles. Explain to me in like 2 paragraphs why our product is going to make their lives easier, what problems we're solving for them. And it just gives you this intense level of personalization across your buying committee and your account. And then you're going in so like much more prepared than other like competitors that just don't have the time, especially at bigger companies who don't have systems in place. And if they don't have the system, it doesn't exist. So we would go in there. And then from that, we build our messaging. You know, I would give it to our AEs and say, okay, this is exactly how you talk to the chief data officer at X account. This is what she cares about. These are the problems. They just hired this person over there, so that they're going to need to reconfigure, blah, blah, blah. This is how you talk to them. And I would do a study guide like that for each account. And it was just, it made everything so much easier. And just the connection it gave me to sales too. Like I, you know, growing up in marketing, the marketing sales relationship was always, you know, there's a lot of friction there and it can get out of control sometimes, but I was so proud of the partnership that we created and how much trust was there. And I just needed them to know, like, you know, you're going to close this. You're going to close this deal. And I'm going to take the baton from point A to point B as successfully as I can and then hand it over to you as, you know, I want you to be as geared up and as excited to head into this as possible with no blind spots. And it's exhilarating to kind of give that amount and then have them come in and say, oh my God, this is incredible. I can't wait to tackle this account. I know everything about them, you know?
Yes. And it's, I just love to see it come to fruition. Like, yeah, especially those companies where you build an ABM program and you're intentional and you say, we know that these accounts don't know we exist. And it's probably going to take 3 to 6 months to just get them to ever even consider booking a call. But once they book that first meeting, you're like, yeah, like the amount of time, energy, and effort that went into targeting and getting them to even be engaged with our brand is one of the most fun wins. And then it's only beaten by when they actually become a customer. So I love those experiences. I'm curious, as you look at things that you would have done differently, like were there any unexpected things that happened along the way that you're like, all right, now that I know that, I'm never doing that again?
Yeah, definitely. I think one of the things I was really proud of at the time was like maybe over scrappiness. We had more budget that we could have spent. And I was like, no, I'm going to blow everyone's mind and I'm going to do this for like $3,000 and everyone's going to think I'm the coolest, scrappiest demand gen person ever. There is no reason for that. If you have the budget and you have creative, thoughtful, impactful ways of spending it or even testing it, do the test, like take your, you know, that's, it's learnings for later. Like always, if the money's there, I say spend it if you can really justify how you're doing it. And then I think we could have like up-leveled some of our subscriptions too. I think that data quality is so hard, right? And I did a lot of like cross-checking across like several different tools where I think if I had just invested in one of them and gotten like the top echelon of data access, I could have saved myself a lot of time. And that is just as valuable as budget in many, many cases. So that's definitely something I would do differently too.
Yeah, it's something I've tried to help people understand is that scrappy does not necessarily mean cheap.
Yes.
Like you can still be scrappy, but you're wise with the investment that you make. And it's something I've learned a lot in the past couple of years when I look at specific customers and I'm like, oh, you viewed scrappy as like, we're not going to invest any money. And then others are like, we view scrappy as we're going to be intentional, strategic, have minimum viable products that do good work, and then reinvest as we see success. Like, yeah, that's scrappy, not let me spend $2 to try to make $2 million. It's like, well,
exactly.
I don't think you can do it. Anyway, so
exactly.
So last question for you is just, as you think back on your first ABM program and starting from scratch, what's one piece of advice you'd give somebody so that they can be more success or more likely to be successful?
Less is more. Definitely don't start with a 500 account program. And if you're in a bigger company, don't start with every AE either. Talk to your head of sales and grab one, maybe two AEs to prove out the concept. Work with each of them to figure out who their like whales are. Like if you could close any 10 accounts, what would they be? And really, we're always going to have marketing data that says, no, those aren't the accounts we want to go after, but really try to understand from their perspective why it is that they think those are good accounts, even if they are kind of breaking our ICP parameters. And then start to build with them too, and kind of take them under the hood a little bit too. I think that sales has a great appreciation for anything that's going to get them a commission. And that's, you know, that's your secret sauce is, you know, I've got this tool over here I'm going to use. And if you tell me what accounts you have, I'm going to give you this study guide and you're going to know everything there is to know. And it's just, it helps to solidify that relationship. And once you get their trust, things just go so much more smoothly, just across the board. And and use your founder. If you're a startup, if you're in tech, you know, like it's a very specific, but if you have a founder, you're an early stage company, use your founder. Their brand is going to be more valuable than your company brand for a long time.
Could not agree more. I think we are just now getting to the point after 2 years of very intentionally building that some people know that Scrappy ABM exists separate from me personally. So I tell our team all the time, like, I'm a tool, put me in and however you need to, like, save a client relationship, to do a one-on-one consulting set, like whatever's needed, put me in. And I say this as somebody that like wasn't a founder 3 years ago. The title matters a lot. And like people really feel special if they get to be engaged with the founder CEO of the brand that they're talking to. And I it's a nuance. Some people think it's dumb, but like there's been night and day, people just feel more special when they talk to the founder. So yeah, use your founders. I think it's a great call out.
Yeah. Agencies have been doing that for so long. You know, you'll talk to someone, you'll get paired up with like a VP of something. You're like, all right, I'm talking to a VP, when it's really someone who's worked there for like a year and maybe like senior manager level at best. It's It's valuable. But in this case, you're like walking the walk. You really are the founder and you've got the bandwidth to be able to like come in and troubleshoot where it's needed.
Yep. Couldn't agree more. Well, Jess, thank you so much for this episode. Hopefully there's a lot of lessons that people are taking away of just like, scrappy doesn't mean cheap, and yes, like piloting something and actually setting like a time frame of like, I'm going to try this. I'm going to prove it out. If it doesn't work, we didn't invest in a new person, but if it does work, this could be a game changer for our business. I love that framing. If people want to find out more about you, where would you point them?
LinkedIn. I love talking about demand gen and ABM. So especially if you're an early stage, I love early stages because there's really no right answer. There's no playbook. We're all making educated guesses and doing our best. So if anyone wants to kind of spitball around, yeah, definitely hit me up on LinkedIn.
I love it. Yes, I think sometimes you're being generous with the phrase of educated guesses in early stage. Sometimes we feel like very uneducated guesses and we're just doing our best. But again, yeah. Jess, thank you so much for being here today. This has been Scrappy ABM. We'll see you guys in the next one. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. If you're looking for more content just like this, I highly recommend you go subscribe to our newsletter. We release weekly playbooks so that you have the actionable ways in which you can start to build an ABM program today. Just go to scrappyabm.com/newsletter to subscribe. And if you enjoyed this episode, we'd really appreciate it if you'd leave a 5-star review and hit the notification bell so you never miss an episode. I look forward to seeing you in the next one.